Now I'm going to go full standard. No more Internet Explorer 9 exclusive specialty and go really into HTML5. And of course, what the hell is HTML5? And HTML5 is a new version of HTML. It's basically after 4.1 that was already 10 years old. It's the first new version of HTML. And it is, if you print it, you can download the spec, and if you print it, it's 1,100 pages. It has some funny things, some weird things inside. It talks about nuclear power plants. It talks about very interesting. It adds very needed new elements like video, canvas, audio, inline SVG. I will show every one of these to you in demos later. Are these the ones we support and I think are important right now? And it removes also older stuff like sensor or the font tag. You do that with CSS today. So the old, some of the old tags that were there earlier today are not used anymore, are being removed from HTML specification. It's not finished. It is work in progress. And it is not just a marketing message. A lot of people today use HTML5 as marketing message. Something's cool, something is Web 2.0, something is hip, it must be HTML5. It is really not just that. It's a really good tool. But it's also really big. So here you see the consortia, the World Wide Web Consortium and the ECMA Consortium, as these are groups of people working on these specs. Microsoft has an employee in this consortium too. Apple does so too. IBM has one. So then they are working on various in working groups. So the HTML working group is actually just one part. There's a lot of work going into Cascade style sheets, into web apps, that's APIs, web services, and scale vector graphics, SVG, and scripting. And now you go down to the specification, and these are all the documents and specifications and standards these people are working on. And as you see, HTML5, you may see it here on the far left in darker blue, that is HTML5. But the whole set of standards or specifications being worked on is what we call HTML5. Because when we use CSS3 and we use SVG and we use the new JavaScript engine, the JavaScript possibilities, not the engine, of course, the possibilities, we talk about the HTML5 and its new features. But it's only one of the many specs that are currently being worked on. And of course, these specs are in various states, and you have a first public working draft. It's basically an open document that everybody can contribute and discuss through mailing lists, through live presence. Then you have a real working draft that they say, okay, this is about where we want to go. Then you have a candidate recommendation, which is actually what we call last call or feature or code complete, which means, okay, we're not adding any new features. We're now going into debugging only problems. And then you go into a call to implement, a proposed recommendation, and say, now we're proposing this exact recommendation, and if you find any last problems, tell us, but we would like to make that a recommendation in the next few months, days, weeks. And currently on a time scale, we are very close before candidate recommendation, so things can still change, but probably they won't change too much, because in May this year, the World Wide Web Consortium wants to finalize, say, this is the last call now, we're not changing the spec, we're only now in fixing problems. And they say they want to, I put a link on the page, it's the PR statement that says these dates, outlines these dates, was only published 2 weeks ago, and said in 2014, we would like to be finished and the final recommendation. So you see the time scale, it's quite big. And of course we release Internet Explorer, and of course exactly after we release, things will change. So we will need to keep updating. Even after IE9 is released, we will need to keep up with changing specs. Now, let's take these colors of the stages and map them on the current specs or documents. And you see, ECMAScript is done. That's quite cool. A lot of the web APIs and SVG is already quite far too. But if you look at HTML itself and cascading style sheets and also web apps or web service APIs, there's still quite some work in progress. So things may, or some of the specs in here are only in the first public working draft. They're, nobody implements them today without knowing that the current implementation will probably have to be thrown away and completely changed once these specs evolve. I'll come to this later when I tell you why IE9 currently does support a certain HTML5 feature like web worker role or like a database. There is specification in here that talk about the database for handling data client side, but it's so early, if you implement it today, it will change and it will break. So let's look at HTML5 in detail. HTML5, as HTML4 was, is basically markup. It's new elements like canvas, audio, video, but it also has new normal, not special media elements like article, section, nav, aside, age group, header, figure, fig caption, address. These are, if you look at the graphic here, you see a normal web page. Today, these would all be divs. Okay, we would have a header, but then you would all have div. Div site, div article, div. And the problem is, you call your article div article. Somebody else might call his article div article. Okay, it's just one character that changes. But there's no standards of using these. And of course, the idea here is to make the web not understandable, more understandable to non-human consumers like search engines, like developers, like screen readers for blind or deaf, or more blind people probably. And okay. I'm the blind guy. Yeah, I can't talk about this kind of thing. And interesting too is if you look at one of those articles, inside an article, you can have a heading or a header again. A header doesn't belong to the top of the page anymore. It can be a header in an article. And now if you write a piece of software that goes to Engadget or Gizmodo and just should parse the articles and change them into a nice reader for Windows 7 slates or iPads, you will be much easier. It will be much easier for you if you have understandable semantics. Which part is an advertisement? Which part is the page navigation? And which is really the article and its header and its time it was published and its footer and its real content? The funny part, however, is for the main content of the page, that's basically the part that contains all the articles, there is no HTML element. So you take a div and you call it whatever you like. I took main content. I found that quite funny. They forgot about that one, but it's just a little detail. So that's the idea behind HTML, the markup. Make the web more semantic. Make it easier to parse. So you're a Microsoft developer. You, of course, use our tools, and you don't want to do everything in Notepad. So what can you work with? So my demos I'm going to show you, I use Visual Studio, and I add two features that I downloaded from visualstudiogallery.msdn.com. And one is an HTML5 IntelliSense parser for Visual Studio. You download that today. It's an MSI. You install it. And then in Visual Studio, in the options on the HTML validation, you say you want to validate against HTML5. You will find it's far from perfect, but it's good work in progress. The second one is the CSS3 IntelliSense schema, if you're a CSS3 editor. But here, what you have to do is, you have to take an XML schema, XSD, and put it with your project. Then this add-on works. You see, this is really, really early prototype style. But the good news is, we're currently working on Visual Studio 2010 Service Pack 1. The beta is downloadable, and these features will be nicely and friendlier integrated into the service pack for you. Now let's look at some of the HTML5 markup elements. So here you see a standard HTML4 page, and let's now create an HTML5 page by basically, we don't need the document type definition anymore. It was tossed. Doctype HTML, that's all you need. And then HTML, the namespace here, has been tossed too. You don't need that anymore for HTML5. You just say HTML. But in the, you leave one meta tag that says basically your char set here is UTF-8. You could also specify the language, but right now I'm not doing this. Actually, you can be much more cruel. You can kill this one, and this page here that you see will properly verify as an HTML5 page. So there is a validator on wc3.org. If you start working with the HTML5 tags, you may want to verify your code against the validator, and this validator will check and say, yep, this page is, it has two warnings, but it's a good and valid HTML5 document. But of course, I will not use this minimal version of HTML5. I stick with the absolutely valid template like this. Because when I have the body and the header and the HTML tag, I can then start to give IDs to certain elements and apply scripts or apply cascading styles. If I don't do that, I get in a little bit of trouble there. So this is valid and a bit better known HTML5 tools, just to give you an impression of what HTML5 looks like. And here, I took a page from Mats Kjær, a Danish guy who created an HTML5 page using all these elements, header, div, select, articles. And if you look at this page, you'll get the source code. It's a very nice blog style page with imagery, with articles. And when you debug this page, you will nicely see by picking elements that here is probably, this probably is the main content, but down here you should have the footer. Let's go over here. It's a div, a footer that contains a div. Here in the main content, you have articles, and aside is basically a menu on the side. So this is a typical aside here, the categories and archives. And you find articles in here that make it really, really easy to parse. And you also see again the currently valid or currently applied cascading style sheets. Some is overwritten here, scratched, and others here in action. So this is quite a good way of getting your first feel for the new tags, how to use them, how to apply them, and basically it's HTML. It's, do not be sad now if you expected something much more wow. It's HTML with a lot of new tags. They're very useful, they're very powerful, but for you at first it will look the same as it looked in HTML4 with a little bit of script and fanciness. But I think for future web pages this becomes very, very important that they use these tags to make the web semantic. So let's look at the, I think, sexiest element or the crassest element of HTML5, the new video tag. So basically, you just add a video tag and you set through attributes how the video should behave. Should it automatically play? Should it loop? Should it preload? Or only start buffering when the user hits the play button? So if you have four videos on the page, you wouldn't preload all of them. But if you have only one, and chances are high that the user is going to watch it because he clicked on the video, you will probably want to preload it. And that's basically all you need to add video to your page. But things, of course, get a little tougher as we are on the open browser market when it comes to video standards. Everybody supports a little bit of a different standard. So it started out with most of the work going into H.264 video, where Microsoft and Apple today have their strengths. We use the H.264 videos in the video tag in the browser, and we do not, both of us actually, Apple's Safari and our Internet Explorer do not render the other formats, Octeora and VP8 WebM video. But especially Chrome made a push and said, we will stop supporting H.264 because we don't like that there is a license model with it, not for the people who watch the video, but for people who commercially create video. We want to have a full open, no copyright format. We go with WebM. And then, of course, the world split in half. Because if they don't support one and the other browser supports doesn't support the other, you will have to either go back to Flash or deliver all video formats on your page. But actually, here we are helping each other a bit. So if you have Chrome installed, you also get the VP8, their video codec, and you can run the WebM videos in Internet Explorer after that. On the other side, we're creating a downloadable extension for Chrome on Windows 7, so you can watch H.264 videos in Chrome too. So you see it's a little bit of a chaos. And here, the version numbers of the version of the browser supporting the video format in question. And for you, as a content creator, of course, you get the question, how the hell do I get these videos? I have a Windows Media Player video or some other file I got from my video camera. How the hell do I get to these formats? And there's two options. There is the Expression Media Encoder for Pro. Unfortunately, the H.264 codec is only contained in the Pro version that you have to buy, not the free version, because of the codec fees. But there is a free tool, the VideoLAN Client, VLC Media Player, that you can also use to convert videos. And if you go to Expression Encoder, you can basically say, I want to convert a video. My encoder is a little unhappy. I have some betas installed, and it sometimes says goodbye the unfriendly way, but it's not the tool. It's always the operator. It's a Microsoft guy is working on it. You say that you want to import a video. You choose a video of your liking, for example, Windows Media Video. And then in the output format, you say that you want MP4, H.264. And then you basically transcode an existing video into H.264. The other thing that I'm selling you this tool as a Microsoft employee, please buy, but please pause the live broadcast. There's also the free tool, the VideoLAN client. It's a very good video player, I think, and it has this convert save feature, and you basically add any video source of your liking. For example, you take an MP4 and you create a WebM. WebM we cannot do in Expression Encoder. You say convert save. And here you have the Forbis WebM video to choose from and say where you want to convert it to, and then go. For the pros, there is an option of creating your own profiles here, saying what codecs, how much compression, things like that, how much the bitrate, the frame rate. But for most people, the basic conversion will be quite a good tool. So you get your videos into the target format. And then you basically what you do is you take a web page. Let me quickly just grab one here in my the empty HTML5 page here. I made the background gray because the video is white, so you really see the player. And all you add to the body here is the video tag, and you see it already recognizes. I turned that HTML5 IntelliSense on. Video tag, and you say the source equals, it's in MP4, I hope. I put the MP4 in here. Yes, it is. And that's basically all you need as a minimum video. So if you run this again, you see, let's come on, be nice. Of course, that's the demo effect. Am I in the right file? Yeah, I am. Videos, video MP4. Yeah, come on. Today is not the video day, obviously. I hope this is not live meeting that kills my... Sorry about that. This is such a simple demo. It just has to work. Or Internet Explorer is now is on a strike here. Let's get it. I did copy the source properly. That is good. Everything is perfect. Now one more try here. Sometimes you never know. Uh-huh. Of course. It's a bug I added on purpose to show you how smart I am, but of course I was so stupid to forget about the bug and think that you know the drill. So what happens? If you see that, of course you will solve it in like a millisecond where I'm debugging my code. In Internet Information Server, you need to add these MIME types, and they're by default, they're not there. I even had to remove two because they were added by a different tool I'm using. But to support all the new formats of HTML5, like fonts, SVG, XHTML, or the various video formats, you have to tell IIS, Internet Information Server, either through its configuration pages or through this web application's web.config, that it should serve these files. And once I stop having trouble here, the video actually loads, but I have no controls because I didn't ask for any. So I have to right click and play the video, and then it will start playing. And you have no resizing, nothing, it's just the video in its original size. So that's the video in its original size. And now, what I want to add are a couple of options to this video. I can, for example, in its properties, I can set a poster equals it's an image that's shown while the video is not playing yet, so you don't see just an empty gray box. You have autoplay. But this is a funny tag. If you set autoplay to false, it will autoplay, because if you have the tag autoplay here, it autoplays. So you can say autoplay gleich equals I love you, and it will work too. So you just say autoplay. If you want autoplay, you say autoplay. The same with controls. Controls, if it detects this, it will show you controls on the browser. Loop equals true, or loop equals loop. Again, one of these means it loops, it will loop the video. Preload, auto. I think the IntelliSense might be a bit old on this one. Preload, so the video gets preloaded, and playback rate equals 1.5. Some of the tags here are not recognized because the IntelliSense we have is not all 100% up to date. And now, another one that I think is quite good, we remove the video source from the video tag itself, and inside here we add a source tag. Source, and source equals, and that's it, that's all we need. Type equals video MP4. So, now we should see something similar to what we saw before, if I didn't trick myself again. Reload. You see the page, you see the controls here. This is rendered by IE. Every browser renders the controls differently. And it should play a little faster than it played before. So if I go playback rate 4, it should start to fly. One. I think you can change, but it didn't like my playback rate setting. Actually, the HTML, the browser, of course, is flawless. It must be the editor. So, okay. So, and this page, of course, this will render to in, let's grab Opera, doesn't, but my Chrome is, Chrome currently still supports H.264. It hasn't removed it yet, so it should play right away. No, I had something wrong with the playback rate. Okay, so that's there, GUI. Every browser has its own playback controls, but that's the way of putting video into, this confuses me. Let's remove it. So, that's your basic. So now comes the kind, the fallback. You want to support video tool for, or first let's do something different. This one is quite good too. If we look at the window again quickly, if we resize, nothing. If we go full screen, nothing. There's no way of going double click, go full screen. So if we want to go full screen, what we have to do is we have to add a little JavaScript here and a little styling and into the head. It's quite simple actually, and it captures the head event listener for the resize event and then resizes the video tag it finds on the page to be full screen. And then when I load body onload equals, I have to start this function too here, resized. So now if I run this, the video should be more or less full screen. If I change it, it will change. And if I go full screen, it will really play full screen. So some features are not there for security reasons. Going full screen and capturing user keyboard input and all is a security problem. But with a little bit of script, you will get all the code after the session. You can sort of fake full screen video rendering. Another one that is quite important is you saw me. I have a WebM version of the same video in my folder, so I add a second source. WebM, and that's video.webm. And now, if I run this, we will get the H.264 version of the video. And Opera today, for example, does not support H.264. It would just give me an error on this page. But they will now, if I say download video, save video, you will see that it's the WebM file that's being saved. So this is a fallback. Browsers pick from top each source, iterate through each source until they find a source they like and can play, or sorry, you can't play video. Are you using IE6? So if I run this, and using the developer tools, if you get tired of that music, tell me, I mute my computer. I can now say, please render in IE7 mode. Use the IE7 rendering engine in the debugger tools. And now if I hit the page, so getting a JavaScript error because the attaching an event handler doesn't work in IE7. I'm sorry about that. It says, hey, you can't play this video. You would probably not insult the user but offer him a download link, but you see the fallback. And, of course, if you want to go fallback the very professional way, you add an object tag in here and say, hey, maybe he has Silverlight installed. And now you can also do Flash, but then it's only the professional, not the very professional. Of course, sorry about that little error about the load. Now I have Silverlight player shown, and I can show my video in Silverlight for a browser that would not support the video tag or in Flash. So the fallback scenario is really good, but if you start to have doing that for every single video on your page, it can get a little cumbersome, especially if you have to transcode into various formats for various browsers. I still hope that there will be a format that's broadly supported, or content will just have to be transcoded so many times before it becomes really usable. Another page I wanted to show you quickly was this one. The script is not that scary. Okay, it's a little scary, but what you get is... I'm too loud, I'm sorry. What you get is 3D video rendering with shadows here and gradients. So I think this is quite... This, of course, uses the hardware acceleration again very well. It's a demo code I found, I have to admit. I added the link to the author, and I think it's a very, very, very good demo. And if you have been doing Silverlight, of course, it's more code than you were doing coding in Silverlight. It's a little more mathematical here, but you can have results that are quite Silverlight-like here. In JavaScript, fully hardware accelerated. I think that's it is very powerful, but you also see its limits. I think playing a basic video is really nice in HTML5. Starting to add stuff like that, you saw the script, and the debugging of that script is a little tricky, I tell you. There is a moment when you say, I'd rather fall back to the browser plugin, to Flash or Silverlight, than to code pages of JavaScript to get an animation or a 3D rendering or... It is up to you. But that, in my opinion, still is a little bit of the limitation of HTML5. Another one that I like is YouTube. Up on YouTube, you can... Of course, if you watch a video today, you will have the Flash player. But there is a page here called youtube.com/HTML5. If you go here, based on a cookie set in your browser, so you can do it on one machine and not on the other, you can join the HTML5 trial. And now, if you go back to looking for the Deadwood trailer, you should get this trailer, this HTML5 video. So you can use this already today on popular sites like YouTube, but you have to turn it on manually for now. And they implemented full screen too. You still see the browser Chrome here, the browser window, but going F11 basically gives you the experience you have with the YouTube player in Flash. And they even turned on the save video feature. They just say, you can? No, I didn't want that. What's that? I wanted to save the video. What the hell is that? So you get some phony, weird other video you want, but of course you can capture the save video event and tell people that this video is copyrighted. Please do not save it on your hard disk. So that is the video tag I just gave you. And then there's the audio tag. It's the very same syntax. Everything is the same as video, except it has no GUI. If you don't show the controls, you'll just see nothing on the page. But it plays audio. You do have controls if you want, and you get the play pause button and stuff. And it behaves the same. Here, the format is basically MP3, and it's supported by most everyone. That's an advantage. Canvas. Did you know the Etch-a-Sketch? It's a little plastic toy. You turn the knob, and it starts to draw a line. So you say line left, line up. And you can draw things like this house. I think in the US it's a very, very well-known toy here. Probably a little less. But that's what the canvas is. So you get an empty space of your size and your liking. And then you can use script to start drawing on that space. You can add images, you can add gradients, you can, or you can draw lines even dynamically. You can animate canvas. So there is a very powerful demo. It's called the Canvas Rider. And this is all done in HTML5 Canvas. So now I should be able to, come on, how do I play? I'm too stupid to play the game. Help! Switch bike, ZC to turn. Come on. I thought this was, let me get the new track. I can't drive, but the, this, up. this is all done in with just JavaScript and the canvas element. Physiotherapy loves me after doing sports. Just done using JavaScript, the canvas tag in real time. So this is what the canvas tag is for, basically. So looking at the canvas tag here, you set a canvas, and here's the fallback. If the browser doesn't support the canvas, that's the text that's shown. And otherwise, here is the onload function. I start drawing on my, I find my canvas, I get its 2D context. There might be a 3D context in the future. Right now, canvas only has a 2D, two dimensions context. And then I get a gradient, I set it, and I fill it, and I put it on my canvas. So that's how this looks. This is the canvas rendering a gradient and having a rounded border. It's very simple, basically, but that's what you want, dynamic graphics. That's what it is. You have also a function to data URL. And what that function on the canvas allows you is to take a dynamic canvas where you can be very artsy and save it to an image. And this is the result of the to data. You can now save this as a PNG. So the picture, the canvas itself can render itself as a PNG and can be downloaded or used further. That's this one simple function. I think it's quite a valuable functionality as well. Further, image can basically, and there's an error in here too, but I remembered. I'm probably not going to panic, or maybe I do. If I do, tell me I put an error in here on purpose. So you basically load an image in a canvas, but I had this at first, it doesn't render properly. You have to get the loaded event. So here, the fish.add event listener load, the load event here, I get an anonymous function to then render this content. And here, I end this function and I say, false. So now, if I run this and I didn't do everything completely wrong, I should now get, you know me, I should get the fish loading. Sometimes it takes a couple of reloads to actually show the result because of cached data in the browser, but that's also. Basically, you can draw any graphic on the canvas from any image source. Another one is timers, and there is a interval-based and a time-based, also a time or a frame-based timer. And if you run, basically, the frame-based timer kicks in every time a new frame is drawn, so as fast as the computer can render. On a faster machine, this will be much faster and slower. And the time-based is basically all 10 milliseconds, or every half second do this. That's the same animation, no matter how fast the computer renders. But that's the difference between time and frame-based animations. You can animate So with a little code, you can animate your content on screen in the canvas. And here, a transformation. So take one transparency, of course, works too, transparent rectangle, and draw it a couple of times and turn it every time. You get this flower. So very simple, very little code here for this effect. Or what I like a lot here is this sample. So what I do is I have a video tag that plays a video. And then I draw a canvas, and on this canvas I draw the video brush. I draw the video again on the canvas. So I get a copy of the video. Here is the real video tag, and here is the canvas showing a copy of the video, and that works actually quite well, quite high frame rates here. And an interesting one here is I can now add a little bit of code if I find that. For example, some code to flip the video. And a little more code to draw a gradient. And now, if I run that, the gradient is not very well visible. I don't know if it's like color scheme, but now it has mirrored the video and plays. So I can create mirror effects, something in real time here, using Canvas and what we know as the video brush in Silverlight. So these effects are possible too using normal HTML5 and JavaScript. Okay. So this is a little bit about the CanvasCom. Here is a little project we did using the Canvas. The Killers website, if I have enough time and this loads fast enough. This is a project, the website of the Killers music band, and it was fully done in Canvas. So I scroll through this animation. I can go here, up here into the stars and see their videos here played, shown as stars, and then I can click them and play them. This is all done using HTML5 Canvas and video tag. I think it's a very beautiful site. We have a website, beautyoftheweb.com. We showcase a lot of these projects. Of course, all HTML5, all completely cross-browser. But in some of them, we had little hands. We helped a little bit, and we show them here as great demos. This is also a good way, good place to go and look for content if you want to learn how to use this. There is quite a few frameworks that help you do things like that. There is the modernizer I showed you in the last session that helps with capability, feature detection in browser. jQuery that helps you quickly find and manipulate elements in the DOM. There is the Easel JavaScript libraries, which basically adds game elements to Canvas and Java using JavaScript like sprites, graphics, animation. There's a link to a game here, Pirates Love Daisies, done with the Easel library in Canvas. It's like a normal browser game, but fully done in HTML5, really nicely done. And there is one tool, Adobe Illustrator to Canvas. It's a free download from the Mix website, Microsoft Mix website. If you use Adobe Illustrator for graphic generation, you can tell it to export your project into an HTML canvas and even add animations and events right into the generated code. That's quite, you will find many, many helpers on the web if you want to start doing this. So the 3D rotating video, I found this library quite quickly. I changed it a little bit, but you don't have to invent everything again yourself. So, sorry about that. Let's quickly look at SVG. Scalable vector graphics has been existing on the web for quite a while, but will get a real push in HTML5 because it can now be integrated right into HTML and you can manipulate it using cascading style sheets. And it's basically a descriptive language to describe graphics. A page where that actually is used a lot is Wikipedia. If you go to Wikipedia and look at the flag, I chose the United States here, you look at the flag itself, this is an SVG rendering. So the flags are rendered using SVG. This SVG here is quite simple. If we look at the source, view source, where are you? Are you there? Yep, found. You see that the SVG to render a flag is quite okay because it's mostly geometric elements that are repeating. But if you start describing complex things like this seal here, it is absolutely possible. But then you will get quite some SVG code to describe this element here. So, of course, you will not, probably not hand code SVG, but if you have SVG assets or you get to SVG code or you can convert your line-based graphics into SVG, it is quite a powerful tool. So if we look at an SVG, interesting too is that SVG can now be embedded in HTML. It has to be a special file. It can now be embedded, which also means if you render this, you will see the Swiss flag. Very patriotic here. Another thing interesting here, you will see the British flag. And now I can go ahead and style this. So I add a little style sheet to this HTML page, and I say I have a box which has a background. The background of my box is another SVG image, so it can be used as a background. And I can, for example, let's quickly look at my British flag and find the cross here in the middle. Here, this is the last path, okay? So if I go into my last path here, I can give it an ID. What did I say? ID equals cross. ID equals cross. You will see that now I set the stroke to a different color using CSS, and this applies to SVG as well. So my page here is the French flag as the background that I dynamically loaded, and the British getting a little green because they're so close to the French, but this starts to get political, so I'm stopping here. So you can manipulate SVG with cascading style sheets. So CSS, we fully support CSS 2.1 now, and we add already a lot in Internet Explorer 9 of the new CSS 3 features, but they are, as you remember from all the specs, they are not finished yet. So we keep adding as they get ready, but for now we're almost there. We're not 100% there. We do shadows, we do 2D transforms, backgrounds, border radiuses. You saw this demo in the very beginning. But CSS is still evolving a lot. So if you look at CSS, you go to my CSS here, you will find this is a lot of CSS 3. It's transparency, it's borders, rounded corners, shadings. That is all very new. If you run IE9 against the very well-known CSS 3 test, ASIC 3, you will see we are not at 100, but I think at 95%, so we're really getting there. Another one, and I think this is the power of, let me quickly go here. Yeah, we looked at that. Media queries. I think CSS3's most powerful features are media queries. And there is an awesome presentation on alone on media queries alone. It's about 60 slides you can download here by Max Design. The slide deck looks absolutely great. It is. And I think media queries will be the powerful feature of CSS. So what can it do? I'll take my page here, and you already saw it. So basically, I add different style sheets, and I tell the style sheet, if my browser has a certain size, render like this. And then I say if the browser is only 800 pixel width, take this rendering. It's a different CSS style sheet applied now because the browser has a different width. And I can go down to the iPhone, Windows Phone rendering for mobile devices, which is without the picture and in only one column. So this is media queries. I think it's a very powerful feature, and you'll find it's very easy to use. So you basically, in your cascading style sheet, you add these. These are the media queries at media. I'm on screen. There's even other media. There's media queries for printers. Am I printing? You can add different style sheets for printing. But I have a screen, and my maximum width is 999 pixels. Then this CSS gets active. Or if I'm on screen and the max width is 800, that's the smaller resolution I have, it's a different CSS I'm applying here. And this gets applied in real time. You saw it even when I resized the page. And for mobile or pages that should be rendered on different devices, I think this is a very, very powerful feature. Another thing is fonts. There is a way of adding fonts to your page. Basically, you give, say, a class font face, and here in CSS, I say, I have a font. Here is the URL of the file. It's a WAF file, web open font format file, and you can call it anything. I call it my font, and you just say that the style here uses my font. So running this page renders this text in a non-typical browser font, and there is a page called the Font Squirrel where you can either take your TrueType fonts, upload them, and have it convert them into WAFs, or you find lots and lots of WAFs to download. They have a huge font gallery for you to download, so you can look for fonts. The most downloaded here. You can look for a font you like. You download the WAF file, you add it to your project, and you just use CSS to say this part is rendered as this WAF. And I think it's quite powerful. You don't use imagery for special fonts. You can use the normal font. It's still full text searchable. It can be marked, copied, pasted by anyone, and you can render in any font that you like. In my opinion, that's a very powerful addition to what we call HTML5, but here it's actually something part of CSS. So, that was the demo. I already... There is a great, great sample by Microsoft, never mind the bullets. We helped implementing that, and it uses cascading style sheets to dynamically draw a comic book. You see when I move my mouse, the characters are moving. So here, all HTML5 audio tags and styling to really draw or walk through this comic book here in animation. It's really, I think, it's very, very nicely done. No browser plugin, nothing. Very beautiful here. And then there is the ECMAScript 2.6.2 standard, the new version of JavaScript. It basically, it's everything JavaScript could do before, but it adds a lot of the methods and features and functions we know from object-oriented languages, like mathematical functions. Arrays didn't exist, now they do. An enhanced object model like define property, get property of, many things that you had to work around using older versions of JavaScript now work in JavaScript 2.6.2, but it's still, it's a script language. So it's not a full-featured object-oriented type-safe language which does proper error handling or exception handling. It's still, it's a script language. A crazy example of ECMAScript 2.6.2 in action is the Chinese Museum, National Museum of National Art, created this 3D environment that I can navigate here to see pieces of artwork, and that is all done in JavaScript, ECMAScript 2.6.2. So it is powerful, but coding it, as you saw also in quite a few of my examples, coding it can be quite a lot of work. So, okay. Now, conclusion. What about all the things I didn't mention? Some of you may have heard of WebSockets, of IndexedDB, of WebWorker. We're not supporting them now. But we have a website, the HTML5 Labs, where you can download working versions of our working sample codes of these not yet standardized future HTML5 elements. You can try them, you can use them. Some are implemented as Silverlight components that you use in your web page. Some are other libraries. But we also warn you, this will change. So you should not take these and start projects based on them, because things will change. This is just a lab for you to find out what's there to come. The other question is, I used to present Windows Mobile a lot recently, Windows Phone 7 development, and I get the question a lot. Okay, now we have C# for Windows Phone 7. We have Objective-C for iPhone. We have Java for Android. And of course, we would like to create our application for all those mobile devices, and we are tired of learning new languages and buying new tools. Wouldn't HTML5 be now the perfect way of doing it once for all the mobile devices? And the answer, theoretically, is yes. Once we will be there this year, Windows Phone 7 will get, second half this year, an update that does HTML5 with IE9 built in, hardware accelerated, very beautiful. But people want apps. People who know apps want them, find them in the App Store. That's another one. They find them there. How do they find your HTML5 browser-optimized page? They like the local icon. They like the fast startup. And they like the interactivity they gain from a local app. So if your application is very data-centric, I think HTML5 might be a choice for mobile devices in the future. But if it takes a long time to preload graphical elements, if it's visually rich, if it's very interactive, lots of user input and reaction to that, HTML5 is just, it takes too long to preload on the mobile, and you are limited in user, direct real-time user interaction. So, did I insult you, dear JavaScript? I didn't mean to. I was a classic. But it's good they update. I'm always having the latest version of Java, and I like that. So, and you also saw that I'm using it. So, even though this potentially would be a great place for HTML5, I personally think we will see apps for a long time, because users are used to apps. We're showing them, Apple showed them, Android shows them, they want to download an app. So I think for quite some time we will still be writing apps, even though HTML5 in the mobile space is catching up in functionality. Now in the normal browser, where do you create HTML5? Where do you use Silverlight or Flash? Do we tell you now to abandon Silverlight and use HTML5? No, No, I think it has to make sense. If you just want to play a video or do a little animation or something quite basic across all platforms, do not make your users install a browser plugin for that. I think a browser today can play a video without the plugin. That's good. But if you find yourself writing a really interactive application, a real rich internet application, like the CoreSuite mobile SAP client done in Silverlight here by CoreSuite, this one in HTML5, it probably would work, but the code needed here for backgrounds, web service calls, updating data, keeping data local, it's just a lot of work in HTML5, and I think here is where Silverlight and also other plugin-based technologies will have a long and also prosperous future. So Silverlight and other plugins are not dead. They're not replaced by HTML5. But I think the time where we'll need the Flash plugin or Silverlight for every little video or audio or animation we want to see on a web page, this time is over. If it can be easily done with HTML5, then yes, use it. Resources. I read these three books. This one is an eye-opener. It's by Bruce Lawson and Remy Sharp, HTML5. It's a short book. These guys are very smart and have a lot of humor. I did fall asleep a couple of times while reading that, but it's my advanced age. Anyway, it's very good to read. You even start to like HTML tags like article or nav. You wouldn't believe that when you started, but it's really good. Then there is the more complete HTML5 book by O'Reilly. It's very good. It's more of a reference. You probably won't read this from A to Z. This really read like a novel from A to Z. It's really good. You learn a lot. And then JavaScript, the good parts. If you're not that at ease with JavaScript and say, do I really have to go back to JavaScript now for my projects? I was used to Silverlight, to C# or to Java or to an object-oriented language. Do I really have to go to script again? This will add peace. Get you into at peace with JavaScript. It will show you a lot of good tricks how to make your coding days and testing your code in JavaScript a lot easier. Those are three books I mostly read, beginning to end, and even recall the other page, one or the other page, and they're really, I can recommend these books here. And I added you a lot of links to the people at Microsoft who work with these technologies. They are really smart, some smart people. In Microsoft, not talking about me, but Giorgio Sardo, for example, who works on this stuff, and he's really, really good to read.